Good day. This is Curtis Shuby, a Face the Culture podcast host. Today we have a really interesting guest. His name is Chris Burgard. He's the former strategic director for Herman Cain's campaign, and he is with His Glory Ministries. And I also hear he's now a filmmaker. How are you today, Chris?
Every day is Christmas, Curtis. Every day.
Yeah, I love that saying. So it sounds like you guys are at His Glory Ministries are working on some films. Can you tell me about what those are?
Absolutely. So His Glory Ministries, we're an online ministry. We reach millions of people a month. And our goal is to bring a billion souls to Christ and to bring the light of truth to the world, because the corporate media is not going to do it for you. And we do everything on our content during the day. Our shows, you'll see everything from great, amazing Bible study, praise music, scripture, to interviews with three-star generals and three-letter intelligence operatives and people that are in the middle of breaking current events across the country and across the world. And then our documentaries that we do, we've done everything from Holy Land in Jerusalem to a couple of films on the border. We've got a new one coming out called Battle for the Border. We just aired Death County and the River of Broken Dreams, which is a film I made on the border 2 summers ago with Tom Homan. That screened for Congress this past July. We made the movie Capital Punishment, Everything They Told You About January 6th Was a Lie, which was possibly one of the most censored movies of 2022 in the United States of America. And we'll be coming up with a follow-up to that film called The War on Truth, and that'll be coming out on March 17th. So that's what we do. We also work with Lara Logan. I don't know if you've ever seen her series, The Rest of the Story, but we're co-executive producers on that. And Lara is just, she's just an incredible journalist and the kind of fearless people we love to work with.
That's also great. So one of the things we wanted to talk about today was the border. And I understand your ministry is down in Texas, and you know, I'm also from Texas originally. So, and I like to tell people sometimes who may be skeptics of, you know, why we need to protect our border. And I think Texans, you know, obviously California, New Mexico, Arizona, I think those four states maybe have a unique perspective on why it's so necessary to keep the border protected. And I understand you, one of those films you made is about that.
Well, two of the films I made were about that.
Two of them.
In fact, the first one I came out with border, when I came out with that in 2007, that got me blacklisted in Hollywood just for telling the truth. And everything we said that was coming in that movie has happened, you know, times 100. My big reason, you know, I like the border secured. I'm tired of picking up dead bodies in my friends' pastures. I mean, I can take you down to Brooks County, Falfurrias, Texas. Sheriff Benny Martinez, there are so many dead bodies coming through there where cartels murder people or illegal aliens get, you know, bit by snakes, the elements get them, that he's had to put a morgue in his parking lot. And the last two times I've been there, that morgue is completely full. My last time down there visiting them, we picked up three bodies in a day and a half. And this is something you're just not hearing about. And the biggest thing I can tell you about the change on the border is, in the old days when we'd track the bad guys through the desert or through these cow pastures and we'd catch them, the really bad guys were carrying dope. And they're still bringing a ton of drugs into this country. But now their loads are usually children, women and children. Mm-hmm. And I can't tell you as a dad what it is when you come across two or three adults with about 6 to 9 kids, and you know where every one of those kids is going to end up if you hadn't stopped them. And for every one group we get, we're missing five. The entire border right now, people need to stop looking at it as an immigration issue, or even simply just, you know, it is national security issue. National security begins on the border. But you have to start looking at it as a battlefield in fifth generation war. And if you're not familiar with fifth generation war is where you overwhelm the enemy and the host and the targeted country in from so many directions that they don't even know what's hitting them and they don't even know what's happening. Like if you would ask most Americans, are we at war right now? They would probably say, no, we're not, which is good. I don't want to get into your war in Ukraine, but no, we're safe at home. When the reality is, in fifth generation war, you do things like target the border. So you flood the target country with so much fentanyl and heroin that you have more deaths of the civilian population than we did killed in action in Iraq, Afghanistan, and Vietnam combined. That's one aspect you see. Another one is to hit them economically. Flood so many tens of millions of foreigners into the country that it overwhelms the economy. It overwhelms the municipality's ability to feed, clothe, and protect these people. It overwhelms law enforcement. The border is, it's more than our Achilles heel, and it's been happening for a long time. I can tell you under the Obama administration, you know, we were coming across large groups of Chinese being brought in through South Texas. And the Biden and the Obama administration did everything they could to shut us up and not get that information out. They wouldn't allow the information officers and Border Patrol to speak with us. But yet they would have these big rescue stations in these pastures. And at the rescue stations, you get there and people are, they're dying of exposure, they're dying of lack of water, of heat. And you get to a rescue station, it's a big tower, and it says you press a button, you'll get a drink of water, and we'll alert the authorities to come rescue. Well, under Obama, they started putting these out, and the directions were in Spanish, English, and Mandarin. And they were that way for years. So even though the administration wouldn't let us, did everything they could to keep us reporting on these groups of Chinese coming through South Texas, they were spending a lot of money to put rescue stations out there with directions in Mandarin. And those stations were up there up until about 3 years ago when the Biden administration came in. They took down the Chinese instructions. But yet we're still seeing record numbers of Chinese coming over our borders.
Yeah, that's so interesting because people want to make it about, you know, Spanish-speaking, you know, Latin America people. But really, I've also heard, I think Marco Rubio mentioned earlier in the week that, or over the weekend rather, that ISIS members are being smuggled across as well. So we're dealing with lots of different nationalities. Like the whole world is coming up through Mexico on our border, not just people from, you know, poor destitute parts of the world that just need help. There's other reasons people come too. Is that right?
Absolutely. And let me share you something else with you that's extremely concerning. Summer before last, down in Eagle Pass, we were running into, in one day, more trained soldiers. I'm not just talking military-age young males. That's very concerning. I'm talking soldiers that were obviously trained. The way they moved, the way they humped their ruck, the way they got through barbed wire. These were soldiers with extensive training. And speaking to some of them, interrogating them, like I know one of them individuals is in the movie Death County and the River of Broken Dreams. It denied that he was in that he was ever in the military. And I'm like, dude, don't lie to me. I look at the way you're standing. What was your MOS? Okay, well, I used to be a combat engineer, but now I just want to be a chef. I've come to America to be a chef. The numbers of military trained people we see coming across these borders should concern everybody. It's to a point that you have to understand that this wasn't done by accident. Everything you're seeing on the border is an orchestrated event.
Yeah, it's kind of creepy to hear it that way, you know, because you hear these people. I mean, I guess even the drug running, it's not a good reason for them to come, but it makes more sense. But for there to be a bigger picture here, that seems much creepier than, I guess, even the bad picture of 10 years ago. So who do you think is actually behind that effort, or why do you think there's that bigger effort being made to bring in people like that that you're talking about?
So you have multiple players domestically and internationally. Obviously you have, you know, for years, everybody was like, well, the Democrats want more voters and the Republicans want cheap labor. Well, it's bigger than that. Yes. And you'll see in Death County, the River of Broken Dreams, we document witness testimony from 2015 saying how there was NGOs and people in the State Department and Democrat staffers down there organizing caravans, organizing getting people up across the border, and then telling them, make sure you remember that it was the Democrats that got you across. So that is happening. And when you bring in so many millions of people like this, it's not just voters, you're also talking redistricting. But what you're also doing is you're weakening America from within. So then you have to take a look at, well, who stands to gain by the United States collapsing from within? And then you have to ask yourself, well, is it a coincidence that the entire fentanyl business and the open trade that's coming in, that the cartels have partnered up with, originated from China, and that it was the CCP also working with Albanians that schooled up cartels like the Sinaloa cartel and others to start making their own, producing their own heroin in Mexico and getting it up? These are, you know, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. And then when you look at domestically, you have to look at politicians and not look at what they say, but look at what they do. And before Trump even came into office, I'd done a video on for Breitbart, got a million views in the first day and a half. And basically I laid out what my dad had always taught me. My dad was a cop, and he said that you can't have a successful criminal organization without political cover. So when you see the cartels making record banner years, they're making billions more than they ever have before until the Biden administration, you have to ask yourself, do the actions of the people that are in Washington, D.C. that are supposed to be representing us, are their actions benefiting the safety and the protection of the American people, or are they benefiting the bottom line of the Mexican drug cartels? And, you know, I said this, gosh, almost over seven years ago. And if you look at what's going on now, well, their actions show you exactly what's going on. The de facto data, the data puts out that the United States federal government is now the largest business partner with the Mexican cartels in human trafficking. We have more slaves, people under bondage in this country now than we did in the 1850s.
So you're saying that these politicians may be getting kickbacks of some kind, or are you applying something different?
I'm saying that absolutely should be investigated.
I see.
Absolutely. I mean, as you're seeing with the Biden family, Joe Biden can say, oh, no one's giving me any money. Well, did you give it to your brother? Did they give it to your son? Are you spreading those finances out throughout the rest of your family?
Yes, that makes sense.
You have to have forensic financial organizations on this. A buddy of mine died in a single car accident. His name was Rusty Fleming. And he was one of the pioneers and one of the foremost experts on the border and making movies about the border. He started about the same time I did. And he had been embedded with the Mexican Gulf cartel. And he wrote a book called Plato o Plomo, which means silver or lead. And it was the colonization of Mexico. And what he was saying back then was that as we saw Colombia become a failed narco-terrorist state, you were going to see Mexico become a narco-terrorist state. And back then, you know, 2005, 2006, people thought he was crazy. Well, now you see that Mexico is a failed state. You see that, well, and some people are going to take umbrage with that, but the level of corruption, it's hard to tell where, you know, the mafia ends and the politicians begin in Mexico. And the way they do that is like, look, you're going to take this money, you're going to work for me, or I'm going to shoot you, I'm going to shoot your family. That's the decision these people are presented with. And now you're seeing that into America. And if you close the border tomorrow, I still don't even know where you start extricating all the tentacles of cartel infiltration into the culture and the businesses of the United States of America. It's deep. We used to hear about people being, you know, killed and dismembered in Mexico. And I've gone from saying that was going to happen and people said I was crazy to it happening in Mexico and people saying, okay, yep, that's just the way it is, to now there's Americans that have happened to. I knew two people in Texas that were lured into Mexico and were killed in this fashion.
Yeah, I think people from other parts of the country, you know, now living in Pennsylvania, but having been from Texas, I think people don't quite understand that when you get closer to that border, it really does feel quite different than the rest of America. And I'm not just talking about, you know, ethnicity. I'm talking about like just the way things work down there, you know, the behaviors of people, the justice system is different. And it's that what you're speaking of, that like that failed state corrupt culture is now permeating into even into our border. Would you agree with that assessment?
Absolutely. I spoke at the sheriff's back in 2007, 2008, I spoke at the National Sheriff's Convention. And what we warned everybody was what we're seeing on the border today, you all are going to see in your counties all across America tomorrow. And now we're seeing that. When you see NYPD get beat up by illegal alien gang members, you know, that's not good. And, you know, look, you know, Lake and Riley, I mean, all these, you know, we've had violent deaths at the hands of violent people. I mean, you got to understand, you know, Venezuela emptied out their prisons. You know, they're, it's not the best and brightest that are all coming here. And what you see is you see a huge criminal and national security operation or national security attack being carried on under camouflage of people looking for a better life. You know, there's a lot of good people that are coming across that border because they've been promised, they've manipulated and thinking, hey, just get to America, everything's going to be great. So all the cameras are on these millions of people coming across the border looking for a better life. They're not showing you what's going on in the mountains in Arizona or the cow pastures in Texas. They're not showing you the folks that have issues and violence issues and are coming out of the prisons that are mingled in among the rest of these families. It's a huge, like I said, if you understand fifth generation warfare, it's a huge attack on the United States of America. And it affects everyone, not just those of us that live, you know, in the South closer to the border.
And so, yeah, I have my own anecdote with that. You know, it seems like I think most Texans may. But I remember when I was growing up, my dad and I would go hunting. And there was a time when my dad shot an animal and it got lost and it rained hard and we had to abandon it, which, you know, hunting laws would say that you can't, you know, shoot and leave an animal. But we had, in this case, we had a real reason to do so. But the landowner down there reported my dad and he had gotten to know the prosecutor and there was a judge there. And like, turns out like everybody was wanting kickbacks for us to get out from under this, in our case, a bogus charge. And it, for me, that was really eye-opening seeing like, you know, that's not how justice, as a lawyer, especially, that's not how justice is done in most of our country, but down there things are done a little differently. So I really do believe you that culture change is really shifting. And you know, it's been a while since I've been down there, but I can't imagine how bad it is now.
Well,
and I remember, go ahead.
I'm not quite following you, Curtis, on that. I'm sorry if something bad happened to you and your dad. My experience down here is just the opposite. Local law enforcement is completely overwhelmed by what's coming across the border. And then they're having to watch their backs from Washington, D.C. I mean, as you see, it's Texas State Guard that's out there on the border defending us. And for a long time, you know, who do you call for help? You call the local sheriffs. And they've just simply been overrun. 2 summers ago, like you saw in the film that I made, Death County and the River of Broken Dreams, down here on the other side of Uvalde, people got together down in Brackettville, Texas, and it was sheriffs. It was a coalition of sheriffs. It was a coalition of judges and magistrates and county supervisors begging the governor to declare a state of invasion because they're being so overrun down there that law enforcement agencies and municipalities can't carry on business, can't protect their own citizens.
Yeah, so I think we may be talking about two separate problems, but I recognize what you're saying too. I guess my point is what I was headed toward is to say that, you know, if not addressed, culture change can happen as well. You know, so that was my entire point. Go ahead. So
if you're talking about culture change, that's part of fifth generation warfare.
Yes, and that's what I was trying to tie in my own experience with.
Yeah. So in Islam, it's called civilization jihad, where you overwhelm the target country, the host country, by bringing in so many people that the country loses identity, loses its culture. And, you know, while there's a lot of people just coming here that want to work hard and get a better life in the United States of America, the reality is what made us Americans is we stood our ground. We came from a generation that believed that resistance to tyranny was obedience to God. It was preached from the pulpits. And you had, you know, a bunch of ragtag farmers and citizens stand up against the greatest military superpower on the planet, and they kicked their butt. And that's how America was born. What you have now coming across the border are folks that did not stand in their countries where they were born. They did not stand up to the government. They did not fight for change. They ran away. They fled. They came here. So you're fundamentally changing the national identity of a country just by what kind of DNA you're wiring into the new system. I mean, Americans, our DNA is wired to be individuals. Our nation, the United States of America, was the first country on the planet that had bottom-up governments. We, the people, were the ones that elected our representatives and sent them to our state capitals and sent them to Washington, D.C. They're supposed to work for us. That's been turned upside down in the last 248 years.
Yes, and so I totally agree. And I guess the point that I was trying to make is that that's, in my mind, already starting. Would you agree with that?
Oh, it's past starting.
Yes.
It's,
so my story kind of resembles
a tipping point. Are we going to be able to come back?
Yeah. You know? So my story kind of resembles what, in my mind, Venezuela might look like. And, you know, so I'm to me, it's concerning that stories like that would even occur in the United States.
Well, the rule of law in the United States is completely upside down. There's,
yes,
there's
I agree.
A law going on, and that should frighten everyone.
So before the show, we kind of chatted about how this border stuff actually ties into a bigger picture with other current events. Could you, I guess, tie all this you've told us about the border into, you know, this overall nationwide or even maybe worldwide narrative that we're having right now?
Sure. In fifth generation warfare, it's so much of it is you want to win the war before the host country even knows, the target country even knows that they're being attacked. So when you see a pandemic come in, and in the pandemic, it targets the middle class. So the middle class loses $16 trillion in their part of the economy, but the powerful elite gain international corporations, gain $16 trillion. And you see a pandemic coming in where you can affect the change in elections, not just the presidential, the whole ticket, when you're coming in by flooding the system with absentee votes, ballots coming in. When you have record numbers of absentee ballots coming in and you can pause an election and start an election, you control the outcome of that election. Then when you follow up the pandemic with the vaccine that you force upon the United States military, where your hardest chargers say, hey, I'm not going to take this vaccine. There haven't been, the effects haven't been studied. People are dying. People are facing, you know, blood clots and strokes and serious other health issues, myocarditis. I'm not doing this. So you have your hardest chargers that get booted out or they resign their commissions in the military. Then the folks you have left, especially in your special operators and in your pilots, your elite in the military, they're having health problems that have significantly reduced our ability to respond to a threat. I've talked to several people in the military and intelligence services said that they're concerned that our ability to defend this country from an outside threat has been degraded 30 to 40% since the vaccine mandate came in. That's the enemies of the United States of America doing more to hurt us and take down our ability to protect ourselves without ever firing a single shot.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of fifth generation warfare. I highly recommend everybody. General Michael Flynn has a book out. It's called The Citizen's Handbook to Fifth Generation War. And I highly recommend everybody read this book. It's co-written with him and a fellow named Boone Cutler, who is he was a sergeant, a special ops sergeant, and worked in the intelligence division department over there. And what they put together is truly eye-opening. You start reading this stuff and you say, okay, now everything makes sense. I see how these things are all connected. And that's a lot for America to grasp, but it's what's actually happening right now.
So one of your other films, or I guess a couple of them now, you said there's an upcoming one about it as well, or about January 6th. Does that tie into this somehow?
It absolutely does. January 6th, we made a movie called Capital Punishment. Everything they told you about January 6th was a lie. That movie came out in 2022. Actually, the end of 2021 was out in 2022. And the attacks we got to censor that movie were just unbelievable. And the algorithms, the way they'd hit it, somebody did not want that information out. And when you see what actually happened that day, when you see guys like Coy Griffin, the head of Cowboys for Trump, never went in the Capitol building. He's standing up there. Somebody has a microphone and he leads a prayer for America to heal this nation. And when he gets arrested and goes 9 days into solitary confinement, and then he's in prison for 3 weeks, and they find him guilty of criminal trespassing, a misdemeanor. And then they use those charges against him to get him fired out of the Otero County Board of Supervisors in New Mexico. Oh, and what does Otero County happen to do? They were the only county in New Mexico that was doing a forensic audit of the 2020 presidential elections. You see how this works? And then when you have January 6th, where you go in there and they say that, oh, Oath Keepers, they're a domestic terrorist organization, is you start to label everyone that was there that day as insurrectionists, as domestic terrorists. You've get a foreign country to name the Oath Keepers as a terrorist organization. Then what happens is you go to places like Alaska, where you have a very conservative leader in the Alaska Assembly there, who happens to be a West Point graduate and an Oath Keeper. And then the Democrats start a movement to try to get him kicked out of office because, according to their line of thinking, he's part of a terrorist organization. You see how that works and how January 6th was used as a hub to go after the political enemies of this administration. And it's basic psyops. You know, you have an event, you bring in the hardest chargers, leaders of organizations, conservatives, Christians, and then you hit them and you hit them hard. You put them in prison for, 7, 8 months for misdemeanors. You keep them in prison for up to 2 years waiting for their trial. You stick them like they did to Coy Griffin in solitary confinement. That scares, you get them to lose their jobs. They lose their houses. They lose their families. This is designed to intimidate and scare the heck out of anybody, so that if you don't agree with this administration's policies are, if you disagree with what our agenda is, this is what we're going to do to you. And this is nothing new. We've seen this. And we've seen this in fascist Italy. We saw it with Stalin and Lenin. We saw it in the burning of the Reichstag in 1933, Nazi Germany. All this stuff is right out of the Cloward-Pliven playbook. It's right out of Saul Alinsky's Rules for Radicals. They told us what they were going to do in order to take down the state and rebuild it in their image. And it's exactly what's happening. If you ever heard of a guy named Yuri Bezimov, you know what I'm talking about. If not, please go look him up. He escaped the KGB and he sought asylum in the United States back in the 80s. He laid out the entire plan that the enemies of the United States were going to do. And it's exactly what's happening. It's not a conspiracy. This is just current events. And our enemy said they were going to do this, and they're doing it.
So your ministry, is it a ministry or how would you classify it?
It absolutely is a ministry. So let's talk about His Glory, because that's just, it's just.
Yeah, I was wanting to tie all this in because it sounds like current events, but I think you indicated on the pre-show that you have a way to tie this into faith. So I'm curious to hear that.
So His Glory was founded by Pastor Dave Scarlett. And let me tell you the kind of guy Pastor Dave is. He was a high school quarterback. Turned down college scholarships to go into the Marine Corps. Came out of the Marine Corps, worked his way up in the business world to be a director at AT&T. And while he was doing that, he got a bad case of botulism poisoning and he died. I mean, he was dead. He was above the bed looking down on himself and seeing everything was happening. And he met Jesus when he died. And the Lord told him, I'm going to send you back, but you're going to work for me. And that's exactly what happened. When Dave came back up, he had to rehabilitate his whole body. He went to ministry, started studying. And for the 7 years it took to get his body back together, he built his spirit and his faith up. And that's how he started His Glory. And it started just him doing Bible teachings off of his iPad in Ohio. And now we're a television network. We're making films. And you can check us out every day on hisglory.me. Pastor Dave, my favorite shows, he does a show called Take Five. And it's news from a biblical perspective. It's current events from a biblical perspective and from an unrestricted perspective. where you're going to get the facts and you're not going to get the propaganda that you'll get in most of our corporate media.
And so all these things we've talked about today, the border, January 6th, the COVID stuff, how does that all tie into faith?
How does it all tie in, excuse me?
Into faith.
Into faith. Well, this is, and this was a big learning curve for me. You know, I was at January 6th, the day it happened, and you see almost 2 million people out there, and you see all these people praying, all these people singing patriotic songs and church groups, one after another. But you didn't see that in the reporting of the event, the post-event. And then when we started doing the follow-up to capital punishment, we started doing the war on truth, what we came up with, what we were finding is, most of the people that are being incarcerated, a lot of them were veterans, and they were all Christians. And it came very evident, clear to all of us, that as Christians, we're called to tell the truth. And when you believe that our rights come from God, not the government, that makes you a danger to people that want to create the state in their own image. Same thing with the veterans. You have a veteran that knows that our rights come from God, not the government, and they've taken an oath to uphold the Constitution and to defend her from all enemies, foreign and domestic. These are the folks that have the biggest targets on their backs. And this is who has to be taken off of the battlefield in order for this country to change into the totalitarian state that they're wanting to take it to.
And so what should we as Christians be doing about this?
Standing up, speaking the truth, and not being afraid. Know that our rights come from God. God's got this. God always wins in the end, and he's going to win this. But in order to do that, his people who are called by his name must turn away from evil. We must seek his face, and we must pray, and then he will heal this land. That's exactly where we are right now. If we stand up and do this and everything we're going through is going to be the biggest call to revival this country's ever seen. And when you get a tipping point of people coming back to Christ, you get a tipping point of people coming back to truth and what started this country, that's when we win this thing.
Do you think that the church's inaction is why we are in the place we are right now?
Oh, absolutely. And you have two types of churches in the country. I mean, I hate to say the smoke machines and skinny jeans prosperity churches and then the remnant church, but basically you have churches and pastors that are afraid to connect with what's going on the secular world. Jesus said, be in this world but not of it. But this is where we are. Render to Caesar what is Caesar's, render to God what is God. But too much of the Christian population in this country, whether it be the 501c3, you can talk about God. Well, you don't have to pay taxes, but if you talk about politics, we're coming after you. A lot of pastors, a lot of church boards, a lot of parish boards are afraid to deal with going on in this country because they're afraid that they will lose their 501c3 status. It's like 30 pieces of silver. I lived in California when the pandemic first came in, and I was blessed to meet two incredible pastors, Pastor Rob McCoy at Godspeed Calvary Chapel in Thousand Oaks and Pastor Jack Hibbs down at Godspeed Calvary Chapel, Chino Hills. And both of these gentlemen closed their churches the first 2 weeks to flatten the curve. And then they wanted to open up, and it's coming on Easter. And all of a sudden they were finding themselves in trouble with the law. And Pastor Rob was hauled in court 4 different times. And they came back and they said, if you, and Rob said, I'm sorry, but we believe the church is essential. It is going to stay open. If Walmart and Sam's Club can stay open, we can stay open. And we're not going to wear masks if we don't want to. That's people's choice. They can do whatever they want. And he had taken what was deemed proper health measures at that time. They put infrared screeners and stuff through all the ventilation systems. But they came out and they said, here's the deal. And they'd been fining the church $500 a service for holding services when they were supposed to be closed. And then they finally said, okay, here's the deal. If you show up this Sunday to have church, we're going to arrest you and the first 1,000 people that come there. We're going to cite them too. And Rob said, okay, well, I listen to God and we're going to have services. And we did. And over 1,000 people from out Southern California came to surround our church so that if the arrest would have started, the services in the church wouldn't be interrupted and they would keep going. And it was just a really glorious day to see that happen. And the Ventura County Sheriff's Department came out and they said, we're not going to arrest anybody for going to church. Not going to happen. And that basically was what broke the back in California for freeing up people to worship again.
Yeah, I think that that's always the model. The church is so powerful if we just act. You know, God calls and we act. And I think many pastors maybe feel that call, but fear just blocks them and gets in the way.
That's what you just said right there, fear.
Yes.
Fear and faith cannot exist in the same space. So if your chest, if your heart is full of faith, there's no room for fear.
Amen.
And fear is what they use to manipulate all of us. Never underestimate the power of fear to manipulate a population. I mean, I don't know what it's like in Ohio, but in Texas, you know, people don't wear masks. Every once in a while, you run into somebody who's in a store or something, and they've got a mask on them. And I just look at that person, I'm like, oh, my poor friend, I'm going to pray for you because you're so scared that you think that's going to save you from this pandemic that, you know, had a 99.9% chance of survivability rate. It's insane to see how people are controlled by fear. I've been in California. I've had people roll up in the car next to me with my windows are up, their windows are up. They've got not one, but two masks on, gloves on their hands and a visor. And they'll look at you and they'll flip you the bird because you're not wearing a mask. They're sure you're going to kill them. That's a level of fear that just takes hold of that person on such a deep level. And that's, again, that comes back to fifth generation warfare. That comes down to controlling the civilian population.
Well, Christopher, I think we're running up against time, but I want to make sure that our audience can get they can find your ministry, they can find your documentaries. So where can they find these things?
Just come to hisglory.me. You can check out all our programming. And if you don't want to watch some of our documentaries for free, you just go to hisglory.tv, hisglory.me, and hisglory.tv.
Great. Yeah, I think I'll check some of these out myself.
Outstanding. And you just have a blessed, blessed day, Curtis.
Yes, you too, Chris. And thank you for coming on to our podcast.
You bet.
This was a Face the Culture podcast. Good day, everybody.